From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
It's hard to think of a brighter botanical bright spot than the one that coleus creates, whether in a container design or planted in a garden bed. And it's hard to think of a more coleus-filled place than Rosie Dawn Gardens, a Michigan-based mail-order nursery that for 23 years has specialized in coleus, coleus, and more coleus, with a collection at the moment of 200-plus varieties. And not just upright ones, but mounding and trailing varieties, too, and in every imaginable leaf color and pattern, and shape, size, and texture of foliage, too. In case you haven't guessed already, coleus is our topic today, so more in a moment, but first, these messages.
Underwriting support for Away to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners on the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
My guest today is Pam Quackenbush, who with her husband, Glenn, owns and operates Rosie Dawn Gardens in New Hudson, Michigan, a mail-order nursery specializing in coleus. I reached out to Pam, who began collecting them in the 1990s, for a bit of a guided tour through the diversity of the species and some practical tips on growing coleus and more. Hi, Pam. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you.
How's spring going out there? I've had snow the last two mornings before we're recording this.
Yeah, we've had some flurries. It's quite chilly today, but the sun is out most of the day, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, well, we have a cheerful topic, which is coleus, so that's positive. And I'll just say I had found your website in a search online, and then learned more about you from a longtime coleus breeder, Chris Baker of Baker's Acres Greenhouse in Ohio, who I did a New York Times garden column with this spring. His family's nursery is retail and person only, not mail order. So he had recommended me to you. And that was how we sort of actually met on the phone. And of course, I clicked right over and had a little bit of a shopping binge. Oops. So, wow, Pam, that's a lot of coleus you have there. Is it 200 and something now?
Yeah, it's 200 and something. It varies, but it's really hard to turn any coleus down. So we grow quite a few.
So we gardeners use them as annuals, sort of quotes around that, but in their homeland, which is where they are perennials. Yeah. Tell us like a little bit about the origin story of these plants.
Well, coleus are native to Southeast Asia and parts of Africa, Northern Australia, Sri Lanka. So they are definitely equatorial and tropical, and they love a nice, warm, somewhat humid environment that can be a little tricky in parts of the United States to replicate. But most of our summers, even in the Midwest, definitely fill the hot and humid requirement.
<Yes. laughs> Yeah. And they're in the mint family, which if you do let them bloom, which everybody sort of pinches and whatever, and we'll talk a little bit more about that, but doesn't want them to bloom a lot of times because they're growing them for the foliage, but you could tell they were in the mint family if you see the flowers. And I think the species is Scutellarioides, Coleus Scutellarioides.
Very good.
Yeah. Has a lot of syllables, that word.
It does. Six. Exactly.
A lot of vowels in there. So it seems like the horticultural version of coleus has evolved in recent decades. We've come to hear about sun coleus, even though we thought of it years ago as a shade, quote, annual. And, besides the extravagant range of colors, there are also plants of different scales and habits. So tell us a little bit about like the breadth, so to speak, especially of the habits, because they're not all upright, sort of shrubby like ones, like years and years and years ago, they used to be with large leaves.
Yeah, there were some of the native plants are very trailing. They have a trailing habit, And then there's mounding plants, which are kind of in between, and they tend to not grow straight upright, but they may grow upright briefly, and then they start to mound. And then there's, of course, the what we think of as the traditional coleus, the classic coleus, which is an upright, almost shrubby plant.
Yeah. I think I read in the International Coleus Society, I believe they have a Facebook page. That's where I found it.
Yes.
They say they've found records of more than 1,800 named cultivars, not all of which they find a source for at the moment. I think they said, I don't know, several hundred, maybe 400 or 500 are in commerce now, but there have been that many that have been named, which is amazing. Now there are, I see sometimes seed packets of coleus, but that's not what you're doing, right? You're not growing them from seed.
Yeah, correct. There are there's a definite difference between cutting grown or clones, which is what we sell, and seed grown varieties. They both have their merits, but for the home gardener, seeds are a little tricky. Coleus seeds are a little tricky to start from seed, and they have you have to start early because they start out very tiny and take a while to grow. So if you want something that you're going to plant out in May, or, you know, here in Michigan anyway, you know, you've got to start pretty early to have a plant that's that size, whereas cuttings start faster, grow faster, and they're also exact clones of the mother plant, whereas seeds have a little more variability to them.
Right. And when you, so you deal with cutting grown plants, as you said, the clones, and when you ship plants, they're kind of like a big liner or I don't know what the other word for that is, but it's a rooted cutting. Is that what you're doing? So you have these stock plants. I'm imagining the greenhouse is just filled with these stock plants. It must be so colorful before you start taking all the cuttings, huh?
Yes, we have many, many, many stock plants. We grow the unpatented varieties or non-patented varieties, which we have. That's the majority of our stock plants. And the patented varieties, we buy cuttings from, they come from all over the world, overseas. And so but sometimes we keep stock plants of those too, because we need to photograph them and we need to, you know, take pictures of them and so we can show people what they look like when they're grown.
Right. You can't reproduce them and sell rooted cuttings of them, because that's against the patenting, but you
Correct.
Can keep your own stock plant that you purchased.
Yes. Yeah. So people who buy them, you know,
sure.
they if they want to overwinter it in their house and keep it for another year, that's perfectly fine. They just cannot propagate and sell them.
Right. Right. So, I mean, I guess technically it's called pigmentation patterning in nature, and it can be in birds, or it can, you know, the plumage of birds, or it can be in coleus leaves. The concentration and location of the colorful compounds, which in this case with the coleus, it's in their leaves. That's what makes them so irresistible to me, whether it's an upright one or a trailing one or a mounding one or whatever. I just am consistently blown away by how, you know, this single coleus, the leaf of a coleus, can just inspire an entire garden design, really, like the palette. Do you know what I mean? It just can have the most interesting color combinations and within it that can suggest to you how to tie together a big container design or a bed or whatever. And I often in the spring, and I've said this before on the show, but, you know, I often am like walking around the garden center in spring when the annuals are available, the flowering annuals, with a favorite coleus in my hand. That's how I start, is with, you know, a piece of that coleus in my hand, and I'm looking to let it inspire me. Do you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. You can start looking from a distance and see a bed of coleus, and then you walk up closely and you see that that's just not a red coleus and a yellow coleus and a green coleus. They're pixelated. They have,
yeah,
you know, they have borders, they have spots, they have, you know, there's all kinds of nuances in the coloration that you can build a container planting around, a bed around. You know, it's fabulous, the variety of colors.
Yeah. And the leaf textures, that's something else that I feel like has gotten more wacky and wild and exciting. Like, even if you decided on a color sort of theme that you were looking for, I mean, like, I'm thinking, okay, like if I wanted purple and bright green, sort of in the more in the chartreusey, the lighter bright green color, well, I could go with fishnet stockings, which has that deep purple veining on bright green big leaves, you know, or I could go to inky fingers, which is like this mounding plant, I think, and its leaves are like what I think they're called, the duck foot shape. They're
Yes.
They're a funny little shape, and they're deep purple, and they're edged with bright green. So even in, you say, oh, I'm looking for a purple and green coleus. Well, hello, have at it. There's a
Yes.
million of
There's a
them.
million in red and green too, or red and, it's incredible how many variations you can get with just a couple of colors.
I mean, how in the world do people decide which to choose when they're on your website? I mean, I was overwhelmed in a very good way, but it's a lot. I mean, any to the recommend, or do customers just like email you and say help, or
Yeah, we get a lot of those, please, and it's kind of like we can't design everyone's garden for them, but we do ask a lot of have a lot of people ask us to do that, but we get a lot of people that just say, just send me what you think is good, and I want 18 coleus, you pick three of each,
Sweet.
so we will do that if they want to trust us. But I think a lot of people s spend hours, even days on, putting together their coleus orders.
Yeah, one thing that coleus, among many things that coleus has going for it, it's unusual in foliage, I think, is the color orange and shades of sort of sunset and sunrise kind of colors. You know, there's pinks in other genera of plants, you know, in foliage, but the oranges, and I'm sure, you know, there's certain plants that have orange, but this is really where there's a lot of possibilities relative to other types of plants, I think. And that's a color that's exciting to add to your designs, you know, not just from flowers, I think.
Well, and because flowers come and go, but leaves are forever.
Yeah, months and
So,
months and months, exactly.
you can get a whole season of color from these plants. But orange was a tricky one there. When we first started, there wasn't we had rustic orange, and there was another variety called Klondike, which is in Winter Sun, though I think Winter Sun was Vern's, and
Oh, Vern
those.
Ogren, he was Color Farm, the late coleus breeder, Vern Ogren, yes.
Exactly. And many of our non-patented varieties are Vern's varieties. And we're all indebted to Vern for the work that he did back when not too many people were paying close attention to coleus. But now, especially with the new hybrids that are coming out from the big companies, the big hybridizers, the patented plants, and there's so much orange now to choose from. It's and they're strong, they're robust, and so people who are looking for orange are really, this is the golden time for them because there's been a lot of work done on them, and they're fabulous.
And as I said, it's just a color that it's hard to get that much of a big splash of it otherwise. So I mean, the leaf shape, I just want to double back for a minute too. The leaf shape thing is just staggering. I mean, it's there's what's the one recently? Skeletal. There was one. Isn't there one that maybe it's named skeletal, but that's what the leaf looks like. It
Well,
looks like a fish skeleton or something.
there's bonefish. That may be what you're thinking of. That's one
Okay.
of the undersea coleus. It's deeply, deeply indented, and practically to the main, center vein,
Right.
and also
Like
fancy,
ferny is. Yeah, crazy.
And some of the edging too never ceases to amaze me. Spiky, toothy, other strange little shapes. I don't even know what to call them, but they're again, you walk up close and you're like, oh my gosh, this is crazy, these edges.
The genetics, I mean, a geneticist I would think would have like a lot of fun trying to figure the genus out, you know, or this species in particular out.
Oh, I think they do. And you know, and coleus are very, very generous with their, you know, with sports, which are, you know, spontaneous mutations. And that's one of the problems with the coleus world sometimes is the same sport will spontaneously happen in different nurseries around, and everybody isolates it and names it something different when they're all essentially the same plant. But, you know, there's a lot of naming and renaming and going on in the coleus world. So,
So we were talking about, like, how do you choose and how do customers choose? Sometimes they say to you, send me 18 of Pam's favorites or whatever.
Yeah.
But what are some of the ones that you would love for people to look at? Maybe some that aren't just your favorites, but are sort of undiscovered, like unsung heroes even, or whatever, some that really speak to you. I don't know.
Well, I think probably my personal all-time favorite is one of our plants called Allison. We've been selling it for a long time, but it's got this just beautiful pink overcast. And depending on what kind of light it's grown in, it can be a softer pink in lower light, or it can be a very bright, almost magenta pink. And there's a lot of other colors in it too, mixed in, you know, yellows and purples and things. But, you know, the overall effect is a beautiful pink plant. And that's probably has my heart as my all-time favorite. I really love Tiger Lily. It's another Color Farm Vern Ogren introduction. It's not a super great seller. We always sell, you know, some, but
right.
And I'm like, if people, and that's a problem being a mail order nursery, I thought if people could walk in here and see this, they would snap it up like crazy.
Yes.
And of course, Mariposa is a big blousy purple plant and pink plant that sells like crazy. But you were talking about leaf textures, and Mariposa has a big wide leaf, and it's soft, and it's you know, you can almost pet it, you know, as opposed to a crispier, crunchier leaf, you know, on some of the other ones. But as far as new plants go, Duman's new plant, Santa Monica, it's kind of a mounding creature. And, you know, when we first got it in, when it was released, we sold it for the first year without having grown it out. And then so we planted it. And then when we saw it, you know, in its all its glory, full grown glory, it was just like, oh my gosh, this, it's just, it's purple, it's pink, it's got spots, it's got, you know, it's crazy. It's just a gorgeous, gorgeous plant. And another recent introduction, you know, a patented plant is Solar Flare. That's a, I guess, ball introduction.
Right.
And it doesn't, like many of that type of plant that are kind of, they start out slow, and then they just turn into the most magnificent plants. And Solar Flare has been a great seller. It's probably our best selling new introduction in a long time, but just absolutely gorgeous, you know. And we went, you know, the first year we only ordered a couple hundred, and we were sorry. So this year we ordered lots and lots and lots of cuttings of Solar Flare.
Oh, interesting.
So hopefully we have enough, because the and Road Trip, another a trailing that is magnificent, that's come out in the last few years. It's similar to our trailing rose in the sense that it's like a dark burgundy with a pink center, but it's been improved to the point where it doesn't bloom like a lot of trailings, unfortunately, are quick to bloom, and you have to do a lot of pinchings with them.
And that's really one of the big things that's in recent years the breeding has focused
absolutely
on about some of these big places, like you mentioned, Ball and Duman and so forth.
Yeah.
But in the University of Florida breeding program,
absolutely,
is to kind of get the plants to be slower to go to bloom so that you get more leaves.
And late blooming and sun tolerant. Those are the two things people are looking for.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk a little bit. We have maybe 5 minutes left, and I wanted to talk about you know, care and so forth. And then also to hopefully have a minute at the end to end up with how to carry one over if I have one that I'm afraid I might not be able to find ever again.
So
care-wise, I mean, I know some of them say they're sun coleus, but generally speaking, I don't put them in the most baking spots, but maybe I could. I don't know. I'm in the Northeast. So I think it depends also what region you're in.
Yeah, I agree. Sun tolerant does not mean sun loving. And I've heard that expression too. Mm-hmm. I still, you know, to our, you know, we firmly believe that some protection from the hottest sun of the day is really beneficial to the overall look of your coleus. And, but a lot of people don't have that, you know, mm-hmm. they, you know, we have people that grow coleus in Arizona beautifully out in the full baking sun, but you really do want to probably stick to those newer introductions that are bred for sun tolerance, rather than some little hothouse, you know, coleus, because you mentioned that a lot of coleus have come and gone, and that's one reason why, is they may be gorgeous, but they just don't have the stamina to make it in, you know, in a wide variety of gardens.
And in the hot sun, in that kind of situation, you're going to really need to be attentive to the watering, because these are not plants that want to dry out.
These they don't want to be sitting in water and soggy, but neither do they want to be completely dry. And you just have to think back again to where they were originated from. You know, they originated in a jungle thing. They don't like the full baking sun. But like I said, you know, if you want that, then go for the newer hybrids.
Yeah, I saw on your website you had a tip not to use cedar mulch around them. I'm not a cedar mulch person, but that was interesting.
Yeah, we've just had people report to us that some of their coleus didn't do well with cedar mulch.
Interesting.
We've never done a scientific. You know, I don't want the cedar mulch people to come back and yell at me, but I just think that if you do use cedar mulch, you maybe pull it back away from the plant, you know, and not have it touch it.
Some of the oils in it might be bothering the plant.
Right. Yeah.
Do you feed them? Are we still pinching? And what's the signal to pinch?
Pinching's up to you. You know, if you let the plant bloom, it switches into reproduction mode, and it never quite recovers if it gets super bloomy, and so keeping it pinched back, you know, from the beginning is helpful. My mother loved the blooms, say, because she liked the insects and the hummingbirds and things that were attracted to them, and so she didn't mind at all. But I think the majority of people feel that they kind of look unkept once they start to bloom. So, but it's certainly a personal decision. I see plenty of people posting pictures of their coleus blooming away, and they seem to love it. So that's great.
And do they need supplemental feeding? I mean,
I wouldn't do it full strength. We prefer a time release fertilizer.
Right.
You know, that you put in the beginning of the season. And if you have a long season, if you're in the South, and like with us, we're lucky if we get 3 or 4 months of good coleus growing weather in Michigan. But, you know, I know, so you may want to repeat the feeding if you have a longer growing season. But for us, one shot of time release fertilizer seems to do it. And it's not too much, because you don't want to put so much fertilizer on it that actually can change the coloration. It can make it too dark. You know, too much nitrogen can make it very green.
And so finally, I just, you know, so again, if I found one that I really loved, or if someone gave me, you know, one that, and I was afraid I didn't even know the name of it or whatever. That's happened to me too. I didn't even know the name. And it's like, how am I going to find it again?
Right.
Because there's so many. Do I grow it as a house plant in the off season, or what's your best recommendation?
Yeah, in the off season as a house plant, coleus like a lot of bright light. So unless you have, you know, a big door wall or something, and you definitely they benefit from some additional grow lights. A lot of people overwinter there, and the best way to overwinter a coleus is to take a cutting rather than bring in the full plant. Because when you bring in the dirt, you might bring in some little hitchhikers too.
And when would I take that? Would I do that in like
late
August
summer before? Because, and don't take a cutting from a a cutting that has a blossom on it or a bud. You know, you want to look very carefully, because once they start to bud, then they never really make a great plant.
Okay.
And some really want to bud. So the best time to take it is early enough in the summer where they haven't really started to think about, oh my gosh, you know, the days are getting shorter, I need to reproduce, and they start blooming. And you can, some people just put them in water and keep them on the windowsill. But I, you know, the best results really are if you take a cutting and put it right into a really good, high quality potting soil. Soil is really important.
So make a rooted cutting in a potting medium as soon as possible.
Yeah, you just keep it moist. You don't have to give it a whole lot of extra care.
Okay. All right. Well, Pam Quackenbush from Rosie Dawn Gardens, and of course with the transcript of the show, we'll have some pictures of some of the things we've been talking about, but also give all the information about how people can go on a binge like I did know, but have some fun, because it's really, it's like an encyclopedia, and I so appreciate it. I'm so glad to have met you, and I hope we'll talk again. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me.
And thanks to all of you for tuning in. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners on the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.